price, payment, and trade value possible, along with servicing all their vehicle needs. With your help, Formula Nissan has accomplished that and have one of the highest customer satisfaction ratings for a Nissan dealer in Central Vermont. I invite you in to experience what customer service should be, whether it's an oil change, purchasing a part from our parts department, or buying a new or pre-owned vehicle. The team at Formula Nissan is ready to take care of our customers and ensure you enjoy your buying experience. Formula Nissan, next to the new Panera Bread on the Barry Montpelier Road. Come in today or visit us online 24/7 at formulanissan.com and experience customer service the way it should be. And let us show you how easy it is to do business at Formula Nissan.
We are back. As I mentioned at the top of the program, we still have an interesting situation going on with the governor's race. On Tuesday was election day. You had the results of Governor Peter Shumlin, razor thin is definitely the operative word. 89,883 votes. That gives him 46.4%. Scott Milne at 87,788, couple of thousand behind. That gives him a 1 percentage point. He's behind at 45.3. So 46.4 to 45.3. When no candidate gets 50%, the legislature is then called in, and they are the ones that ultimately make the decision in January. As I also mentioned at the top of the program, Scott Milne has not in any way conceded this race, has not decided, A, whether or not he will call for a recount, and has said in some published reports that he's going to take his case to the Vermont legislature. Joining us live on the line this morning is the Speaker of the House, Shap Smith. Mr. Speaker, thank you for joining us. How are you this morning?
I am great, thanks.
Congratulations on your reelection.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it was a tough day, but it was great to spend a lot of time with my constituents out on the sidewalks.
The Democrats lost 11 seats. What do you take as the message there?
Well, I think there were a couple things going on. Vermont is not immune to national trends, and people are definitely feeling they're feeling strained. They don't feel like they can make ends meet, and I think people are frustrated by that. And when you see something like that, you can expect to have a tough night for incumbents.
Let's talk, though, specifically about the governor's race. I mean, you didn't see this coming, right?
I thought that it was going to be closer than the polls suggested, but I didn't think it was going to be this close. So, I think it's fair to say that nobody really anticipated that it was going to be as close as it was.
What's the message do you think voters are sending on this gubernatorial vote?
Hard for me to say. I think that people were sending a similar message to incumbents at the top of the ticket, saying, you know, you're responsible for trying to make Vermont a better place for us to live, and we don't feel like that's happening right now, and we want to support people who might make it happen.
Do you think it was policy positions? Is it issues that were really driving people? Do you think it was personal distrust, say, of the governor? What do you think's going on?
You know, it's hard for me to say. I mean, I get different things from different people. I think a lot of it had to do with people's frustration about the rising cost of education and the property taxes in particular. I think that some of it had to do with the failed rollout of Healthcare Connect and people's frustrations with that. And I think it there were other reasons, sort of local reasons, that people may have been feeling some frustration. But I think the undercurrent is one that exists throughout this country. And what we have is a situation where 4 years into a recovery, people's real wages continue to be lower than they were in 2007, 2008. And costs of living have not gone down. And that includes food, that includes gas, that includes fuel, and then it includes taxes as well. And I think that, you know, voters throughout the country are saying, this is a problem. We are having a hard time making ends meet, and we want things to change.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned healthcare and property taxes, because, you know, I mean, the reason I'm asking you this question is if you don't know what the message is, then how do you know what to do in January in terms of setting priorities?
Well, I think that the message that many of us received was we're really concerned about the cost of education. We're struggling. We're also struggling with the cost of health care. We had hopes that the Affordable Care Act and the exchange would make things better. And because in part the exchange hasn't worked effectively, that has not happened. So I think that the message for us is, hey, we want you to take a look at education. We value education. We have good schools in the state of Vermont, but with a declining enrollment and increasing costs, that seems like things are out of alignment, and property taxes are really challenging for us. And I think the other thing is people are saying, hey, the cost of health care is going to our family bottom line, and it's really causing us to struggle. And we're willing to look at things that are going to make health care costs at least stay steady, if not go down. But what you've done so far doesn't seem to have worked.
You've been clear in the past that the House or the legislature will not rubber stamp whatever comes out of the administration when it comes to health care financing. Yep. Do Tuesday's results change that even more? Do you think that, for example, single payer, whatever this idea is that the governor has, is the message in there too that should just be put on hold?
Well, I think that the it's incumbent on the administration to put something on the table that shows Vermonters a blueprint for how we can bring the cost of health care under control and how it's going to make people's economic lives better. And I think that that's what the administration needs to do if it wants to be able to move forward on single payer or universal health care. You know, the discussion has always been about cost control first and then universal finance second. So I think that that's even stronger message from the electorate that that has to be what the focus of the administration is as we look at a financing plan.
So does property tax reform move to number one for you to set as the priority for the House for next year?
Well, the cost of education is intertwined with the issue of health care costs. I know that you read or saw the School Boards Association report that came out a couple weeks before the election that talked about how the cost of health care impact the cost of education. So I think that those two issues are intertwined. Certainly, property taxes and the cost of education and the quality of education, making sure that we're delivering the best education that we can to our kids, is going to be a top priority. And I believe that healthcare will continue to be a priority as well.
So I'm not clear what that means. So you're going to do both at the same time?
Well, we have 150 members, and we have 14 committees, and I believe that we can look at both issues at the same time. And quite frankly, if we don't look at the issue of the cost of health care in the context of the cost of education, I'm not sure we can address fully the cost of education.
So you don't interpret Tuesday's vote in the governor's race or even in the lieutenant governor's race as any sort of a negative on this single-payer idea?
I have always believed that it was an uphill battle on single-payer. And I think that what those results say is there's an even higher burden on the administration to show that a single-payer plan would be better for Vermonters from an economic perspective. And I think that's always been the case. That's always been what the administration was going to have to show. And I think that the Vermonters said on Tuesday, we expect you to show us that as well, and we're not convinced at the moment that you've put the facts on the table that make the case.
Let's talk about Scott Milton here for a moment, the Republican candidate. As I gave the numbers before, he came in one percentage point behind You have been quoted as saying that you expect lawmakers to follow tradition and vote for the candidate who received the most votes. Why? Why is that necessarily? I mean, how did that even become the tradition?
I don't know what the historical precedent is for that and why that became the tradition. But, you know, my sense is that, you know, a week or two before the election, Scott Milne was saying, I expect the person who gets the most votes will be elected governor. And he was recognizing, as were the other candidates who were in the debate, that the historical precedent in Vermont had been that the person who gets the plurality of the votes wins the election. That's the way tradition has worked. You know, when I first got elected to the legislature in 2002, I had voted for Doug Racine at the ballot box. But when I came into the legislature, I voted for Jim Douglas because he had gotten a plurality of votes. He had not gotten the majority. He had actually gotten less votes than Peter Shumlin, and I think maybe less votes than Scott Milne got. And yet he was elected governor, and that was true for Peter Shumlin in 2010. So there's a pretty strong historical precedent. I noticed that Phil Scott said that that's the precedent that he would follow if he had a vote when the legislature comes back. And I think that it's sort of historical tradition within Vermont.
What about the argument that lawmakers, that members of the House should vote according to how their district went?
You know, I think that it's, if that's what Scott wants to make for an argument, that's his prerogative. That has not been the history, nor is it what he suggested should happen just a week or two before the election. So I think that Vermonters really expect that the person who wins the plurality is going to be elected governor.
So this is in a secret ballot. Are you comfortable with that?
Am I comfortable with it being a secret ballot?
Yeah.
Yeah, I am comfortable with it being a secret ballot. The speaker's vote is a secret ballot. Judicial retention is a secret ballot. I think that individual members can make representations about how they're voting, but I don't have it. Problem it being a secret ballot.
But why, I mean, why should it be? I mean, if we're going to have an open process in this state where, you know, everybody talks about transparency, wouldn't it be better if people knew how their lawmakers voted? I mean, what an important question.
Yeah, you know, I think that it's appropriate for constituents to ask how their representative or senator voted. You know, I will certainly tell people how I'm going to vote. You know, I just haven't really given that much thought to whether it should be a secret ballot or not.
So you'd vote for Scott Milne if you were the top vote getter?
I would, yep.
Is he mishandling this post-election period here?
You know, I don't think it's fair for me to characterize what he's doing. He clearly has a view about the way he wants to handle it. You know, look, I like Scott a lot. I've talked to him a lot of times. I think he's a good guy. His dad is someone who is who's been an incredible resource for me, and I consider him a good friend. His daughter Elise was a page when I was in the legislature. She's wonderful. I think that Scott has to do what he thinks he has to do, and I don't think I need to opine on whether what he is doing is correct or not. It might not be what I would do, but it's not my prerogative to tell Scott what to do.
Phil Scott, the lieutenant governor, has discouraged the idea of a recount. Do you feel the same way that he does, that it would be unnecessary and too much work?
You know, I don't think a recount is going to change anything, but we have recount processes for a reason. And I think that people should not be discouraged from exercising a statutory right to call for a recount if they think it's appropriate. And, you know, would I prefer that resources be used in some other way? Probably. But I think that if Scott thinks a recount is the thing to do and the right way to go, we've given him that authority under the statute, and I don't think it's appropriate for us to tell him he can't do it.
Let me take one call here quickly, and we'll let you go. We go to the Northeast Kingdom. Nick, good morning. You're on the air with Speaker Shep Smith.
Morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Morning.
No, I guess my biggest thing is I look at it as a point, and I voted for Governor Sumlin the first time around, but
yep.
when I look at it now, I look at the overwhelming population of Vermont that voted to not have him in office. Over 50% of the votes were not for him. So in some aspect of my mind, it tells me that people want to change. Obviously, there was a lot of votes for, you know, Bernie Peters and a lot of the other people that were on the docket as well. But it tells me off the bat that people do not want to see Governor Sumlin in that position again. And, you know, I guess that's where I would stand, too, as I would look at it from an incumbent saying, okay, well, maybe it's time for me to step down because people don't want me here. So I kind of see two sides of the story.
Hmm. Yeah. All right.
I mean, the flip side of that is there was no majority for Scott Milne either. And, in fact, fewer people in the state of Vermont thought that Scott should be governor. So, you know, this is one of those situations where I think it makes sense for the top vote getter to win the election.
Does it create any problem not having this settled?
I don't think so. I think that the administration will move forward with the anticipation that there will be an election in the legislature and that Governor Shumlin will win. And I think they'll be focused on the challenges that we have, trying to figure out how we're going to balance the budget, trying to come up with ideas around education, making sure that we have the best education system in the country while also being efficient, and also focusing on how we can make our healthcare system better and making investments that are going to make our jobs give us more jobs and make our economy stronger.
Let's go to Chelsea. Jake, I got to be quick here. Good morning.
Yes, I was just wondering what conclusions you can draw from the election results, other than half the registered voters didn't even bother voting.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
That is an incredibly discouraging figure, and we should be discouraged about what's happening nationwide. I think it's time for us to adopt a law where it is mandatory for people to vote, and that they are fined if they do not do so.
Seriously?
Yes, I do think so. You see it in other countries around the world, and voter participation is much higher. You know, I just think that we have to get people to the ballot box, and I think it's worth considering making it mandatory.
Wow. All right. That's mandatory in this country? You think that's going to go over terribly well? Maybe people will show up to get mad about that.
Right. Well, you know, sometimes you just got to take a stand, Mark, and this is the one. If the worst thing I do is take a stand suggesting voting should be mandatory, then I think that's not such a bad thing.
Thank you for your time this morning. I appreciate it.
All right. Talk to you later.
Speaker of the House, Shep Smith, joining us live on the line this morning. All right. Well, that certainly poses one question we can bat around next hour. Mandatory voting, and if you don't vote, there's a fine. Wow. All right. Okay, I got a couple of other questions for you, too, we can chat about coming up in hour number two, including what was the message that you were trying to send on Tuesday's election? Maybe if you don't want to talk about what you were trying to send, how about what message do you think your neighbors were trying to send? What do you think of what Scott Milne's doing here, not conceding the race and looking to take it to the legislature? So there's at least, there's probably five questions in there that you can chat about with us right here at 244-1777 is our local number, toll free 877-291-8255. FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, AM 550 WDEV Waterbury, Montpelier News is next.